Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, folks. This is Dave Schmidt. I'm your host here again tonight on the Sedona Connection. Glad to have you here with us here tonight. First of all, I just want to say thank you, all the folks, especially those of you who are somewhat new to listening to the radio broadcast here. In the last 2 and 3 weeks, we've just had this huge exponential growth. I want to thank you all for just being able to listen in. Couple things, just on a couple administrative things. This is a part of the Sedona Connection. I'm a host of the Sedona Connection. You can learn more about myself and what we do on thesedonaconnection.com. And in there, you will find links to all of the past radio programs. You can go to Blog Talk Radio, but it's a little easier if you go over to my website, and you'll find all my newsletters. And all those are posted on the newsletter archives at the top of the website there. And you'll see the recent newsletters that are there at the top. And also in each of the week's newsletters, there's always the direct link to take you into the radio programs here. And all the programs are archived. That's what Blog Talk Radio does. It's great to know that. And also, if you want to call in tonight, the call-in number is 646-716-8069. Again, that number is 646-716-8069. And you press the number 1 on your touch-tone phone. That lets us know that you're going to want to be able to come on the air. You have a question, or you may have some comments. You want to join in on the conversation as it develops here through the evening. So you have the website. And if you would like to subscribe to my newsletter, go to the website, and in the right-hand column, you'll see a little notice there that says, click here to join the newsletter list. But folks, if you're listening, if you're from outside of the United States, that form doesn't let you fill it out, well, send me an email directly, and then I'll manually add you to my newsletter list. And as I said, the newsletters come out, you know, once a week, and then I do special postings now and then. My newsletters, what I do, I summarize in print, in text, what the newsletter is about, but most of the content is in the video. I do video newsletters. They will usually range somewhere between 8 and all the way up to around 20 minutes. I usually try to keep them into the 10 to 12 minute range each week. And again, you can go back and you can listen to those at any time. So I have the newsletter. If you want to friend me on Facebook, it's The Sedona Connection Dave Schmidt, and all the newsletters are posted on Facebook. All the newsletters are posted on the website, and then you will actually then make it transferred over to the archived section. And when you email me, folks, with a lot of your questions, what's helpful for me is the email list is really growing, and I only have so many hours a day. I could spend all day answering emails. What's helpful is if you would just do your own research, look and browse through my newsletters and see if the topic that you might have a question on, if it's covered in that newsletter. And then you can go and you can read through the newsletter, and if necessary, you can go and you can listen to the radio program as well. And because it's in the radio programs that I really get to go into much more depth about the topic that is there. Now, what I normally do here on the radio program, I usually talk for most of the time it's usually always around a half hour. Sometimes I'll even go up into an hour, and I'll talk about the topic of discussion. And then at that point in time, what I do, I open it up to the callers. Now, sometimes, you know, I won't have quite as much to say. Tonight, I'm going to try to keep it to under a half hour. So if you want to call in with some questions, I understand that you don't want to hang on that phone there, you know, hang on the phone for a long time. So you may want to wait then about 5 minutes before I'm ready to start taking the callers. I'll make that announcement, and then that's when you can go ahead and press that one on your touch tone phone. And last week, what happened, folks, was, you know, I always try to make sure I get to everybody before we're going to go off the air. My program is limited to 2 hours, and they do cut me off after 2 hours. And what last week, it kind of looked like maybe I didn't plan my time out and stuff like that. Well, what happened is there were about 6 callers that all came in the last 10 minutes, and they all decided to call in at once. And that's why I just had to rush through, folks, because I'm looking at my switchboard. I can see how many people there are. I can see how many people are interested and wanting to call in. And so I try to pace it through the evening. I always try to give everybody as much time as they want. And sometimes the comments of a caller or the question of a caller is what's going to allow me to expound on that topic a little bit more. So if you're calling in and if I'm asking your question, I mean answering your question, and I all of a sudden get into a discussion and then all of a sudden I go into a narrative, it's not just you, it's also for all the other thousands of people who are listening so I can explain more in depth. And, folks, I just want to say thank you. Thank you, thank you. Your comments are just so encouraging, and that your graciousness, your kindness, the comments that you say, and it's my pleasure to be here. And when I say this, it's not me to prop myself up. I we all have something that we do well, but this is just something that comes easy for me. But the comment that I get the most through the newsletters, through the comments, through the emails, is I have the ability to take complex items and explain them in a simple manner that makes sense, whether the newsletters I write or whether how I discuss a topic on the radio program here. Well, tonight, the topic tonight, I'm going to talk about the big picture. I've always talked about when it comes to down to the revaluation of the currencies, whether it's the dinar or the global currency reset, which predominantly includes the dong and the Indonesian rupiah and a few other currencies. It always comes down to when we want to exchange these currencies, and yeah, we want to become that overnight millionaire, who's footing the bill? That's always the question. Who is footing the bill? Well, somebody has to put up that money, because there's now reported that there's trillions and trillions of dinars out there to cash in. Well, one of the things that's been really helpful in the last 2 weeks for me is I have been able to develop a relationship now with 9 different people who either used to or they still are currently being posted on 2 predominant blog sites, Dinar Recaps and S3Alpha.net. Those are the 2 blog sites that are the ones that probably get, you know, the most variety. And when you go to those 2 blog sites, I mean, understand there's going to be opinions all over the map. If you try to figure out and get an answer by just what you're reading there, it's going to keep you quite confused, because you're going to find opinions on both sides of the issue. You're going to find people taking varying differences. And the operators of those blog sites, that's what they do. They put out information. They don't take positions. They allow viable positions on both sides of the topic to be described. And when I say both sides, sometimes there can be 3 or 4 sides of a topic, it seems like. And so, folks, there's stuff that comes in all over the map. But here's what I've been able to summarize. If I ask that question first, who's footing the bill, almost all the things that others are saying come out of their perspective, their perception to that answer. And there's predominantly 3 different positions in how that can be played out. Number one is the fact that we only have the money that is currently existing in our current economic system in all the countries all around the world. And if that is the case, then there isn't money on this planet to pay for the dinar and the dong. So people who say this is a scam, people who say this is not possible, people who say that, oh, you're not going to get your $3.71 or whatever it is, it's because they're seeing this from the perception of there isn't enough money in the world. And if that's their position, they're totally right. They're absolutely right. In the current economic system, there isn't. Then there's a second position, and this was what I had described in one of my first newsletters that I put out, what's called the Q&A on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And we talked about the oil credits issue. Predominantly, it started with China, and it's now moved into the United States, and they're exchanging oil credits with Iraq. Because, see, what they do is they're not paying cash for the dinar. They are exchanging it for credits of oil to receive oil at a huge discounted rate. Because, see, Iraq has the second largest oil reserves in the world. There was a comment some months ago from the prime minister who was saying that we have billions and billions and billions of barrels of oil, but we don't even have running water, which means they're a war-torn country that's been devastated by war, and their infrastructure is in total devastation, and they want to rebuild their country. But to do that, they have to revalue their currency and come back onto the open global market. And that's why it's common sense. When people say, well, that dinar's never, you're going to never get your money for it. I say, hello, wake up, please. Iraq is not going to be sitting on gold mines of all of that oil and not revalue their currency so they can rebuild their country. It's common sense that they want to rebuild their country. It's common sense that they want to fix their infrastructure. It's common sense that they want good streets, good schools, good infrastructure, and you know, good medical facilities for their people. Another thing that a lot of folks don't realize, Iraq is the third strongest agriculture growing region in the world. The Tigris and Euphrates rivers flows the full length of their country, and that is a real fertile agriculture producing valley, and they have plenty of water to use for irrigation to produce all kinds of agriculture. They are the dominant agriculture producing area of the whole Middle East and that region of the world. So they have oil. They have all of that. They have the largest natural gas reserves in the world. It's common sense they're not going to keep their currency at the same value that it is, because to do that, everything they have to import into their country is extremely expensive. They're going to bring their currency back online and balance with the rest of the world. And in 1990, before their currency was devalued, one dinar, one Iraqi dinar, would trade for $3.41. And so in that second scenario of the oil credits, it's really easy to see that it could support that kind of money. Well, there's a third scenario that's out there. And this is a scenario that more and more people are beginning to understand. And that is all of the gold that has basically been kept off market, and it's spread throughout Southeast Asia. And I'm going to talk more about that tonight. But it's gold that's spread throughout the whole region. And folks, there is more and more and more stuff, information, data, intel that is coming out from so many different multiple sources that is backing up that it's there. Now, we also have to look at this from the perspective of there's a group of people out there that I refer to as the cabal. These are the group of people that the ultra-wealthy that control the world's money supply, they control the world's wealth. They want to keep themselves in that position, and they don't want this global currency reset to happen because, see, then they lose their power if that happens. And so they are the ones who have been fighting this revaluation tooth and nail, everything that they can to try to stop this. And that's one of the reasons, primary reasons why it's taking so long. Well, if you're sitting there with dinar and you're wondering what's been happening, well, in the last week and a half, I came out with my newsletter and some videos. I said the dinar is underway and it is unfolding is the term that I used in the newsletter yesterday. Because, see, there's three steps to this process. Once it was given the go, once it was given an initial release, The first step is what is called the bonds. The bonds that are backed up by all that gold in Asia had to be transferred here to the United States and the other outlets around the world that are going to disperse the funds. Now, most of it is in U.S. financial institutions, even though you can go into banks all around the world, because the money is just wired in between banks all around the world is what it's done. That happened. It was last week. And in the newsletter I sent out yesterday, you actually saw a picture of one of those bonds. Now, was that the exact bond? I don't know. But those are the bonds that were the 1934 series Federal Reserve that the Federal Reserve used that was backed up by all that gold. And so that is, that's an illustration of those bonds that were out there. The second step, then, is the revaluation itself. Well, a lot of us thought that, gee, just press the button, boom, and it's all done and taken care of. And we're beginning to realize, no, it's not that simple. Because what happens is, in all the trading floors, the foreign exchange trading exchange floors all around the world, the currencies need to be brought online. And if they brought them all online at the same time, it would crash the trading stations, the trading desks, the trading exchanges all around the world. They would crash them. And so they have to do it slowly, little bit by little bit, behind the scenes before it's released out into the public. Now, that's the revaluation. And it's in the process, and that is a process. We have a tendency to think the revaluation is when you and I get to go to the bank. No, that's not necessarily true. Okay, it's a time-taking situation, and it is currently unfolding now. And then the third thing is the global currency reset, and it's when all the currencies all around the world are reset and set to the new value based on commodity assets that each of their own countries have. Now, we know there's trillions of dinars out there that people are holding in hands waiting for this revaluation so they can cash the money in. And who's paying for all of that? Well, you heard the story about 2 weeks ago. 2 years ago, I had met with a gentleman in a bank, in a lobby of a bank in Vancouver, British Columbia. And he had pulled out this $30 million 1934 series Federal Reserve bond. Handed it to me. I held that in my hands. I looked at it. I looked it over, and I said, this is real. This is real. He had been meeting with a family in China who had released this bond to him to cash to give away for some humanitarian aid projects. Now, there's another story about why that bond never got cashed, and that's not my intent here tonight. But that continued to unfold all the time that was in there, the unfolding of what took place there. And that goes back to this family in China that is called the Dragon family that has literally been the collectors of this gold for millennia, bringing the gold in from all around the world. And this family has been doing this, and now you can... I've shared this with for months here on the radio program. I think they're divinely appointed for this point in time in history as we're going through the shift of the history of the human race. But that gold isn't just in China. It's in China. It's in Taiwan. It's in Vietnam. It's in Thailand. It's in the Philippines. And it's in Indonesia. And on yesterday's newsletter, I sent in there a 15-minute YouTube video called The Freeing of Humanity. And it's the story about President Sukarno of Indonesia. And he was the president of Indonesia back in through the 40s through the 60s. And it was the story about a meeting that he had with President Kennedy called the Hilton Green Agreement. Now, in the video, the narrator of the video makes a mistake. He says that the agreement was signed just prior to the assassination of Kennedy in 1966. That's just a simple verbal misstatement, folks. He understands and knows it was 1963 that Kennedy was assassinated. And what I'm telling you here is this is not the first story of this money It's been around for decades, but it's been hidden. But in the last 2 and 3 years, there is all kinds of stuff that's starting to come out. You could go and you could Google the Hilton Green Agreement, and you will find scores of different articles or videos that are describing what happened at that point in time. It's not a secret anymore, folks. It's getting out there, and it's spreading around. Well, this gold in that video, you said, was it, what it portrays in the video is that this was the gold that was part of Solomon's temple in the biblical era around 900 BC. And that gold was transferred and transported to Indonesia, and there it was held and to be kept in basically a trusteeship until this time. And President Sukarno was basically the trustee, and you can call it the Sukarno Trust. That's what I refer to it as. And there have been many others who have referred to that gold. It's not just them. But I always refer back to the best source of information in all of this is a book, and it's not in printed form, and it's not really in a total book form, but it was written by David Wilcock, and it's divinecosmos.com is his website. And at the top of the search window, you put in financial tyranny. That's what he called it. He wrote it in three parts. And in the part two, at the very end, and the part two is about 140 pages long, but they're very white page, lots of pictures, so it doesn't read like it's 140 pages. But at the very end of it, he talks about the trillion-dollar lawsuit. And this trillion-dollar lawsuit that was filed a couple years ago, and it was on the behalf of the Dragon family and the Sukarno Trust to recover the gold that had been stolen from them and basically validating the bonds that were there. These are the bonds and the money that is, that has always been there. Now, President Sukarno knew that his primary mission in life was to take all this gold and to spread it around the world so there would be economic equality for all countries all around the world, and you would find these third world countries wouldn't be living in utter poverty. And he had developed a relationship with President Kennedy and to use the influence of the United States along with him to have this gold spread out around the world. And they came to this agreement and they signed it, and that is what is called the Hilton Green Agreement. And 11 days after it was signed, President Kennedy was assassinated. There are different theories out there, folks, but bottom line is most people that really know their stuff said this is the one that was the common sense. Because, see, it was the Sukarno gold that backed up what Kennedy had done. President Kennedy signed an executive order to create new U.S. Treasury dollar bills in contrast to the Federal Reserve notes. And by having all this gold back that up, that was going to put the Federal Reserve out of business, out of power. They were done. They were gone. And obviously, the powers that be were not going to let that happen. And that's why they assassinated Kennedy. And shortly after Kennedy's assassination, President Johnson came in, basically changed that executive order, and assigned all of that gold over to the Federal Reserve. And see, and that's part of that lawsuit that is being filed because it was stolen. It was illegally stolen from the trust. But that money that the Federal Reserve got is just a drop in the bucket of all that gold that is out there. So in that video, when it says it's the freeing of humanity, folks, in the big picture, that's really what is happening. We as a human race for millennia have been in a form of what is called financial slavery. We've been like slaves financially. We haven't had the real freedom to do what we want, when we want, and to live on a basis of financial equality. There's only a small percentage of the people around the world that you would call wealthy. If you're making over $100,000 a year, do you know that you're in the top 1 to 1.5% of the wealthiest people on this planet? There's lots of people here in the United States that have a combined income, husband and wife combined incomes of over $100,000. And you may not feel like you're very rich, but in contrast to the 7 billion people on this planet, you sure are. Now, can you imagine the people who are making over $1 million a year, such a small percentage of them? Supposedly 40% of all the money on the planet, and this doesn't count all that gold, it's what's called the recorded money on the planet, is held by the top 1% money makers. The top 1% have 40% of all the money here on the planet. It shows you it's back to what is called the literally the thousands of years of history, that it's always been just a few elite that control the masses. For most of our history, it was about political control through kings, monarchs, and dictators, and they controlled the people through those means. When we had the advent of democracy, the people began to step into a form of a political freedom, as we could choose who our leaders were. We could basically choose to govern ourselves. Now, yes, has it been hampered by the power of money? Yes, it has. But these controlling factors, if you will notice, also right about the time of the rise of the American Revolution, is also the time that that money began to become a common form of exchange. Prior to that, a lot of goods and services were exchanged through barter. Not everybody had common currency. Not everybody had common forms of monetary exchange. It was after that money began to become a common form of exchange, because they knew if they could control the money, they could control the people. And there's a famous quote by one of the Rothschild family members back in the mid-1800s. And he said, "Let me control a country's currency, and I will control the country, regardless of what laws they pass." What does that really mean? That if they could control the currency, they're still the controllers. They're still in power. They really get to do what they want. We get to live thinking that we have this freedom, but we're not really free, because they still dominate and control the world's money, and almost everything in this world is dependent upon money in some form or another. Well, we are right now moving into the era where that's getting ready to change, and we are moving into a financial freedom. And it's this revaluation of the currencies that is the first step of that taking place. It's the first step of our freedom as a human race. And that video, The Freeing of Humanity, kind of outlines some of what's taking place. And what I said in my newsletter that I sent out last night is, these bonds are backed by all that gold in Asia. That money is now sitting in the banks, and we are right on the edge, right on the verge of that money being released to us. Now, I made some bold statements saying it might have been around Monday. But folks, remember, the information that comes to me as the others receive it, they don't always have the full, complete 100% picture. And there always seems to be some items that have been coming along that seem to kind of, you know, delay it, put a kink into it, that, you know, a monkey wrench into the situation. But this time, most of those that have been following this for some time are saying, we don't think it's going to happen. There are still some technical things that are unfolding, but we really possibly think. Now, could something come up? Yes. Do I know what it is? No. Do the people I communicate know what it is? No. But here's what I can tell you is, again, these people have right at the top communication, right at the very top communication with what's going on and what's taking place. They are not the decision makers, so therefore they can't dictate or tell you accurately when it's going to happen. But in the video that I put out in yesterday's newsletters, I talked about when you look at the big picture collectively, all of us that are reporting to you, it's a scenario like the old parable of the blind men describing an elephant. Everybody describes the elephant a little bit differently because that is their perception or their world or their area of expertise, and they're coming from that perspective, but they don't see the whole picture. I don't know anybody who sees the whole picture. I don't see the whole picture. I'm dependent upon these others explain it to me. But some of these people are experts in their field, and they're very, very good at what they do. And when we can take all the information in, and it's like the old adage of when you're basically bringing in, you know, the wheat, you're bringing in the harvest. Well, in the midst of it is a ton of weeds as well. So when you read these different blog sites, there's a lot of weeds out there, and there's a lot of good nourishment out there as well. A lot of chatter, and some of the chatter is good, and some of it, you know, you can just let it go. And each of us are going to see that a little bit differently, how that even gets carried out. But the one thing that I'm noticing, all these different people, it's like it's coming down to the funnel, and the information is saying it's similar, and these people don't necessarily talk to us. And it was 3 days ago I was talking with one of my friends here on, that I communicate with, and we were saying, is this really happening? Is this really real? Are we really this close? So look at all this information coming in. And we had come to a conclusion. This is right there at the doorstep. It's all happening. Or else there are 10 different people out there that we communicate with. They don't communicate with each other, but they all decided to get together and create this great grand conspiracy lie and all tell the same story. Folks, that ain't happening. I'm sorry. That is not happening because these folks don't talk to each other. Now, you can say, well, they're all getting their information from the same source. No, they're not. They're not all getting their information from the same source. What it tells you is the information coming down is fairly accurate. We don't have the exact details of it, so we can't say the exact time. Now, some of you have been emailing to me and says, could this be delayed? Yes, like it has been for months. But the difference this time around is the picture is becoming much clearer. It's like the focus is getting dialed in one notch at a time, and that's what's been going on for the last 2 weeks. And it's getting to be really clear what's going on here, and that's why I believe we're at the doorstep. Could it be tomorrow in the next couple of days? Yes. Could it still be a couple weeks to a month if a delay comes up? Yes. But if there's no another delay, this is just my estimation. This is my personal opinion. This is my speculation. If we don't get any delay, I think we're going to see it probably by the end of this week or early next week. Now, does that mean we're going to be going to the banks? I don't know. I think what we're going to be seeing is the unfolding of the reval that's going to go public. That's what I'm saying. There's details in the stuff that we don't always know, and we have a tendency to read into it what we want it to be. So, folks, that's what's developing. That's what's happening. When I talk about this, the Green Hilton Agreement, go into David Wilcox's book, Financial Tyranny. That is your best source of information. Google President Sukarno of Indonesia, and it's his son that is now basically the trustee of that Sukarno trustee. And in that, you saw the picture that 8 days ago, he was signing uncut $1 bills that are new U.S. Treasury dollar bills, and that was his way of signing off that trust money to countries all around the world. Now, there's other articles that talk about it. It's not just that one. So it is appearing, and it is taking place, and it is unfolding. Those are the details that I know, and those are from the sources of the people that I talk to. Well, that's what's happening, folks. So we're right at the doorstep. Okay? Now, I'm ready to go in a couple minutes. I'm going to go ahead and start going to the callers, and I've already got about five or six of you lined up that are ready to basically to be to ready to come on and to talk. And folks, I open it up here, okay? I open it up. You call in with your questions, whatever that you want. Last week, the topic was a lot around setting up bank accounts and LLCs and trust and subchapter S corporations and all that kind of stuff, because those are things that are extremely important to you about how you're going to manage all this money, what are you going to do with it. But if I could share anything, stay focused, stay positive, be of faith, let go of the anxiety, let go of the drama, come to that place of peace. That's one of the best things that I could share with you to prepare us for what's about ready to come our way. Okay? All right. I'm ready to go to callers. And the first gentleman I am going to go to is from area code 661. His name is Nick, and he's from Tempe, Arizona. Nick, you're on the air. What can I help you with tonight?
Good evening, Dave. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
Good. Actually, I'm in Tempe. I should use a 928 area code like you, but got the computer today. Listen, I have a question for you regarding cashier's checks. You might have gone over this before, but my question is this. Let's see, we do the exchange for the dinar, and we have a certain amount, and let's say, obviously, they're not going to have the amount of cash to give to us, physical cash.
Right.
So will there be a waiting period to do wire transfers? Is there any limit on that you've heard of? Or do you think we'll have that money available to move into different accounts like LLCs? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it all depends. If you're a part of a private agreement, then yes, there can be a delay in your money being used. Now, this is what is current banking operations. You know, this is a whole new ballgame. We've never been down before, so we don't really know what's going to happen. And there are some banks that might do this a little bit differently. But in conjunction with what our standard banking operations today, when you take a foreign currency into a bank and exchange it, they're going to give you back the equivalent in American money. And that comes
right.
in one of three forms: cash, a cashier's check, or a deposit into your bank account. And most likely they're going to deposit it into your bank account. I don't see a delay on it once it's on the open market. By that time, it's open for the public, and it's just like any other currency in the world. It's just a different country in the amount that you have. That's the only thing that's different. So they should be able to give you that money right away and have access to it right away if you're exchanging it on the open public market. Now, if you're part of a private or a group exchange, then that can be a different story.
Right.
So, but I don't see any limitations on it if you're just going to go in to a bank. Now, and it's beginning to look like the vast majority for everybody, it's just going to be an open public exchange market. You get to do that with the bank of your choice. And the banks then may decide, do they want to have an 800 number or not have an 800 number. The banks may decide, you know, what are you going to do with it. You will have, if it's over $10,000, which is going to be for most of us, you are going to have
Absolutely.
To fill out what is called the FinCEN report. And that is a federal government report that goes to the federal government. And its means is so that if there's a cash transaction of over $10,000, they have the right to track that, to basically track down terrorists and drug dealers that use cash predominantly in their operations. And that's part of current law. So does that answer your question?
It sure does, yeah. And one of the other things that we've been talking about over on the site, because, you know, I do globalcurrencyreset.net, is about NDAs. And some people aren't completely familiar about NDAs. And I'll be honest with you, I've done transactions at the bank before, foreign currency transactions. And it's a very streamlined process. So I figure that there wouldn't even be any necessary reason for an NDA. What do you think about that?
Well, there's been a lot of controversy around the NDA, but most of that was back in October and November, and it created a lot of scare. Here's what has been developing recently. If you are a part of a private transaction, a private contract transaction, they are
right.
being asked to sign NDAs, a non-disclosure agreement. But they're fairly simple NDAs, and they're just basically saying you need to keep quiet about this until it goes public. And that's
right.
what
and
I
need to read you something from – this is something that you may be aware of or may not be. It's from Chase. Okay, so listen, they're saying – and I don't know, you could probably pull this off the Internet, but they're saying effective March 23rd, 2014. You could just search for this. It says that how we determine the exchange rate that we use for foreign currency transactions. So they're updating everybody's deposit agreement for Chase. You could just search for that online. So
wow.
I thought that was of powerful interest. I mean, yeah, if you search for
the
that,
fact
just
that
search for, yeah, effective
the
March
very
23rd.
Fact that they're putting out a statement to all of their customers about how they handle foreign currency transactions, effective the 23rd, which is this coming Sunday.
We
wow.
just got it. Yeah, we just got that.
By
so
one
I
of the
wasn't
big
sure
four,
if
that,
anyone's even told
yeah.
you about that. Yeah,
well,
this was from the January 18th statement.
Here's what I can say. When I mentioned earlier about these relationships that I've been developing, I have a guy that I talk with almost every day. He has another person that he talks with every day. That person, I need to be careful so I don't disclose
right.
and I keep confidentiality, but he has a firsthand, long-term, years friendship with an individual who is at the very, very top at one of the big four banks. And then he has a second step away relationship with another individual who's at the top of one of the other big four banks. And they're basically saying to him, this is, we're ready. We have been aware of this for over a month that it was all coming down. We're ready for the transactions. And they're all saying, it's real. It's going to happen. We're under non-disclosure. We cannot talk about it at all publicly until it's released. But they're saying the banks are all ready. When you go into a branch and they tell you that they're not doing it, see, the banks have basically are caught in a catch-22 situation. They can't admit
and,
it's
yes.
going to happen because if they admit it, then they lose all their employees. Because,
right.
you know, the frontline teller that doesn't make very much money all of a sudden becomes an overnight millionaire and then walks off the job, and then they don't have anybody to transact our money. And the second thing, from a legal perspective, they couldn't really say it because, see, the dinar is not yet tradable in a bank. And so the banks were really in a catch-22. They couldn't admit it was going on, but, you know, they would kind of, some of them would do wink-winks, and at the top level they all knew, but they couldn't pass it on yet. But, you know, a bank can change its policy overnight. And say,
of course,
oh,
yes.
today
and,
we
yes.
don't do it, but tomorrow we do, you know, so. Yeah.
Right. But remember, all those people, mm-hmm. the tellers, they're all compartmentalized. So just like in the military, which I've been in, is people don't always know what's going on just because of the flow of information is just secured in certain aspects. But I feel that from a recent call that I listened to where a woman went into Wells Fargo and she said, are you doing exchanges for Iraqi dinar? The teller in the bank said, no, but we will soon. And that's all she said.
Right.
She wouldn't say anything else. And I'm telling people that we only have a limited amount of time once this goes through before it probably hits the news. So I'm telling people probably a couple of days. What do you feel like as soon as we get that notice to go in right away probably, right?
Well, my sources are saying a couple of days, but I want to be careful. I don't want to speculate. I don't want to sound
right.
like some of the others that are saying tonight, tonight, tonight. But they're based on – the information they are being told, it's going to be probably by the end of the week or early next week.
Early next week. That sounds about right. All right.
Bye.
Thanks very much,
bye.
Man. I'll keep posting your info on globalcurrencyreset.net. Thank you so much for
thanks.
Everything you do. We
thanks,
really
Nick.
Appreciate it. Have a good
my
evening.
My pleasure. Okay. All right. Thanks. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I'm just going to go on to the next caller because I'm realizing I'm getting a lot of people lined up here. So we're just going to keep moving on through. I'm going to area code 541, a lady by the name of Mary from Oregon. Mary, you're on the line. What can I help you with tonight? Hello, Mary. Are you there? Can you hear me, Mary? Are you, because maybe you'd put yourself on hold and you're just going to start coming through. Well, Mary, I'm going to put you on hold.
Hello?
And then I'll try. Okay, there you are. Boy, you caught me.
I had myself muted for me at the computer. Okay, first I want to ask about the DDR. We're hearing, we have DDRs, over 50 million, that's all the banks is going to be able to take from each person. What do we do with the rest of the stuff?
I don't know where
true,
you heard that, and I haven't heard that anywhere. And if a bank is only going to let you put $50 million in their bank, I'd go to another bank. That just doesn't make sense to me. Why would a bank limit how much money you can put in your bank? Because, see, they can put it into a digital format. Your bank accounts are all digital.
Yes, I know it.
And what's the difference of whether you have $5 million or $500 million? It's all digital. So, and Mary, I haven't heard that anywhere. And I can tell you right now,
well,
if I go into a bank...
Well, I've heard it many, many times on Tony's program.
Well, I don't know where that's coming from. If a bank says, gee, you can only keep $50 million in my bank, I'm going to a different bank.
No, trade in $50 million in dinars.
Trade in $50 million? Well, it's their loss. It's the bank's loss. But first of all, Mary, it's just a good policy to have bank accounts in more than one bank.
Oh, yes,
you don't
want to
put all your eggs in one basket. So you spread, you want to develop good personal relationships with those bankers because they're great sources of information for you. And the more money that you have, you should spread it out to multiple banks in multiple accounts.
I will. That's what we're trying to do now, to find personal bankers for us, because we never had much before, so we never needed one.
I just know there's so much information that comes off Tony's site that is so far off the wall and there's no basis to it. And you talk to bankers and they say that's just not normal banking operations. And I don't know why a bank would say, you know, we're only going to limit you to $50 million and what you can cash in. It just doesn't make sense to me. But I haven't heard that.
Well,
I don't know. I'm just giving you my opinion.
Right. Okay. I want to ask you, we have a trust program, STS. Master Protection, have you ever heard of that one?
Not that one, but it's good to have trust. You should always put this into either trust or a business account and not your personal account so that not personally liable to lose it.
I'm putting it in the trust and also LLCs under the trust.
Absolutely. Minimally, you should always have an LLC. It's called limited liability because it protects it so that people can't come after to get it. And then from there, you can disperse it out into various ways and means of what fits
for you. Oh, good. That's what we do. Okay, another thing. We're going to Panama, and we're going to be moved to Volcan. It's close to DV, and you need to come look at it because it's beautiful, beautiful country. and it is so beautiful. We bought some land from a guy named Ben, and it is just beautiful.
I know it's a beautiful area down there. So
yeah.
I'll probably get
down
there. But I might do that, but you know, right after the RV happens, I'm going to be real busy.
Well, you can come down and buy some land.
About 4 to 6 months, I might, you know. But I'll continue to do my workshops because I love doing that, and I'll do those at least once a month. So,
Is yours your work? Does your workshop also advise on investments?
Yes, I do spend 2 hours talking about that, and I give brief overviews, and I open it up to questions and answers. And I always say though. People ask me, do I have any recommendations for attorneys, CPAs, and stuff like that? And I just say, I don't give those, and here's why. Because to me personally, this is just my personal opinion, those are the relationships you want to develop face-to-face. You want to be able to have a CPA that's in your community that you can go and sit down and talk with face-to-face and have a face-to-face interaction. Not something that's over the telephone or over the computer that's halfway across the country. You want to have that type of a relationship. So that's why I don't recommend, because if I'm recommending, I may be recommending somebody to you that's halfway across the country.
Well, ours is halfway across the country, but he flies in to see us.
Those are the types of people you want to develop personal relationships with. And when you have that kind of money, they're going to be glad to have a personal relationship with you. Believe me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what we got to get, good personal relationships with some bankers. That's what we got to get next.
Yes. See, don't be afraid of your banker.
I'm not afraid of your banker. They ask you how much you're going to put in, and they ask you a million questions I don't want to answer right now.
And you don't have to. Operate in your own personal best interest. But also make them a good friend because they are an excellent source of information. They are the ones that can refer you to a CPA and a tax attorney and a wealth advisor because they know who those people are, and they're going to give you good advice, because if they don't give you good advice, they know that you walk out the door with your money.
Okay. Well,
they know that.
Okay, well, we've listened to your program several times due to a friend telling us about it and a friend from Florida. And so the best of luck to you, and we'll be listening till the end.
Thanks, Mary. Hey, what part of Oregon do you live in?
We live in Albany, Oregon.
Oh, well, I grew up in Newburgh.
Newburgh? Oh,
that's
my husband knows where that is. He was born and raised here. Yes, in Oregon.
I grew up in Newburgh. You know, it's about 35 miles there from Albany. I moved to Newburgh when I was 5 and moved away when I was 25. That's where I grew up.
Well, if you ever come up, you got my phone number, and if you want to go down to Panama, give me a call. We'll move to meet at Volcon, and I'll show you some property.
Thanks, Mary. Okay.
Oh, you're welcome. Uh-huh. Bye.
All right. Okay. Good night. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good night.
Okay, I'm going to the next gentleman from area code 505. His name is Billy, and he's from Santa Fe. Billy, you're on the air tonight. What can I help you with?
Oh, good evening, Dave. First of all, I just want to thank you for all your efforts.
Uh-huh.
And since it was brought up while I was waiting, the lady just now talking about that $50 million deal, that's old information. That was something that Tony had heard at one time, and he just threw it out there. And and since then, he has, you know, pretty much said that's a non-issue.
Yeah, I don't listen to Tony. I will read the recaps of what he says, but I just don't listen to it. So, but that's just me.
Yeah. Anyway, that's old info that he just happened to hear. Question about the video, the Sukarno video. This might not be important, but I was curious who the gentleman was that was narrating that.
I don't know, and I didn't see his name anywhere.
Right.
Because the video is really new, because that signing was just 8 days ago, and the video just came out about 3 or 4 days ago, and so it's fairly new. I didn't see his name on it anywhere. I was listening for content. He did make the one misstatement, you know, about 1966 versus 63, and that's just a misquote. That's all that he'd done. But other than that, all the information in there seems to be fairly reliable. And, you know, people can research that, and they'll find that information in a number of different other sources as well, other than just what happened 8 days ago. That's what's new.
Yeah, I was just curious about that because I didn't see a name either. And his voice, he sounded quite authoritative, and thought maybe he was, you know, was a key figure of some sort.
Don't know. But I just know I looked at the content and the information, and I thought, you know, I saw it right away. I said, that's the bonds. He's releasing the bonds. See, that's what his father had done with Kennedy. But it never got finished because 11 days later they assassinated Kennedy. And then when they signed those bonds, it was the gold behind it. And then, you know, President Johnson assigned all that gold over to the Federal Reserve.
Uh-huh. Right.
And so now he says he's releasing it again. So, yeah. And what's interesting, you see, is when all that gold gets backed up by new U.S. Treasury notes, the Federal Reserve is over their history. They cannot compete with it because they're broke. They're bankrupt. They only have fiat currency. They have no gold hardly at all anymore to back up their money. So, this is the major step of what we're waiting for.
Uh-huh. Another question about the dong. For those of us out there that only hold dong, I'm just curious about, I mean, you might not know how this is going to come down, but there's been talk about having to call an 800 number or just walking in, or what's your thoughts on that?
Well, dong is a currently traded currency on the open foreign exchange market. So you can take a dong down to a bank and exchange it today. But its rate is horrible. And it'll just revalue, and you'll take it down, and you'll just get more money for it when it revalues.
Right.
The key thing is to understand there's a difference between the dinar and the dong. The dong is dependent upon the global currency reset, where the dinar is a single country resetting its money, where the dong is dependent upon a global act, where all the countries are being reset all at the same time. Now,
right.
Most people feel that's going to happen at the same time, both the dinar and the dong. There's different theories on that. We'll just know it when it happens, what it's going to be.
Okay, I just thought it might create some kind of a problem if you have a large amount of dong and you walk in there. But I imagine they just refer you to a private banker or make an appointment or something.
What they'll probably do is because there's going to be a huge rush, and they'll probably have you call the 800 number for private appointments for security reasons.
Right.
Because, if all of a sudden the news came out that the dinar got revalued and the global currency reset took place, you could walk down to the bank, tomorrow morning, and the next thing you know, you're standing in a line of 50 people who all got more than $1 million in their hand. Well, that's not a very safe place to be. That's not secured without armed protection. See, that's when you want the Brinks guys there. Of course, you want some police officers there, protecting you to not let anybody come in and steal it. So, see, it's best for them. They're going to say, we're going to call, and you're going to set up an appointment so there's only a couple of you here at a time, and it might be at an off location, So there, it's stuff like that. But each bank gets to set that for themselves, how they want to handle that.
Uh-huh. Okay, and just one last question. A lot of talk out there about SKRs and switching to an SKR system and this kind of thing. Could you address that?
Well, SKRs are called safekeeping receipts. Mm-hmm. They're a form of a financial instrument that is used in most banks around the world. But the SKRs, my understanding, are being given to those that are cashing out in private transactions, and that is their form of a deposit, and then it'll be converted over to their currencies or in their bank accounts when it goes public. But they don't have access to that. They can borrow money against it. They can take a small percentage of it out, but they can't use it all at the same time. It's a safekeeping receipt. It's a safekeeping receipt. It's a form of a financial transaction that banks use.
Right.
I don't think
going
to become an issue once it goes public.
Right.
There's
no need
for an SKR once it goes public.
Actually, I misspoke there. I was familiar with SKRs. What I meant was SDRs.
SDRs. I don't know what's going to come out of that. Now, that's a term that, the International Monetary Fund uses as a common form of a transaction of money from all the different currencies around the world. I don't necessarily see that happening, because an SDR then means it's a one world currency.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily see that happen. There's different opinions around that. I know the series that have been written by a guy by the name of J.C. Collins has been very good.
Right.
You could Google his name. And
yeah,
look at
I got it in front
of
me right now.
Yeah,
that's why I brought it up. That's where I got it.
I just don't have a deep feel for that. Of what it's going to be, I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, thank you for your efforts, and I'll keep listening. I appreciate it.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Billy.
You bet. Thank you.
Good night. Mm-hmm.
Night.
Okay, going to keep going right on down the line. I'm going to a gentleman in area code 321. His name is Shane from Winter Park, Florida. You're Shane, you're on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm sort of new to the last couple weeks reading up on you and listening and all this. I sort of got trapped into all this, and it's very fascinating. It's sort of like getting an MBA in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And I think we all have various angles and interests in all this. And mine is, if you could elaborate or sort of clarify for me How does the redemption of the Chinese historical bonds play into the global reset? Does it precipitate the reset, or is it part of the reset? I've heard the funds have been released, but just not extended to purchase those bonds. Are you familiar with that?
Yes. In fact, I put a picture of one of those on my newsletter that I sent out last night. You go to my website and click on the newsletter that I put out last night, you'll see a picture of one of those bonds, the 1934 okay. series bond that was issued by the Federal Reserve that we were given to, you know, the gold trustees, predominantly the Dragon family in China, when they gave them some of their gold. The bonds are the money that's backing up the reset. Those bonds are backed up by gold. And that's what's backing up what gives us our money. See, when we go in and trade in our currencies, well, somebody's got to pay for that. Somebody's got to foot that bill. And those bonds are what are footing that bill. And there's trillions of dollars of those bonds.
Maybe I'm confused on it. You refer it to it as the Federal Reserve bonds. I'm speaking more of, for example, a farmer's land bond from China, from the reorganization bonds that were issued.
I'm not familiar with those.
Okay.
Well, the historical Chinese bonds in 1934 were issued by the Federal Reserve.
Oh, okay.
Now,
okay.
The name
All
at
right.
the top may be a little bit different. Because, see,
right.
go take a look at that picture that's on my website. You'll see at the top
I
where
did.
It says Federal Reserve.
Yes, okay, see? Okay.
Now, it was a different story back. It was a different story back then. You know, it wasn't fiat money back then.
Right.
It was all gold-backed bonds back then. So the Federal Reserve was a gold-backed form of a currency.
And so that is part. So that is okay. Well, obviously that is a major part of the whole reset. That's how it's being
yes.
funded. Yes.
Huge.
Because okay.
that's what's backing up the money we're going to get paid.
Okay. All right.
Thank you
very much for the education on all this, and it's been interesting following you and your blog and everything, and hearing everybody's different perspective on all this, and I hope it works out for everybody. So,
I do too.
I do too.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Shane.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, going down the list, I'm now going to area code 407. Oh, I'm sorry, I clicked the wrong one. It's shifted on me right there. I'm going to area code 407 to a lady by the name of Gwen in Orlando, Florida. Gwen, here, you're on the air. How can I help you?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay, good. I'm trying to understand, and I've been hearing about the Republic, and in order for it to RV, that it needed to be stock exchange needed to crash. Is that a fact, or is that something, a scare tactic here?
It's not a fact. It's just a different opinion that some people have. There is a possibility that could happen because most of the stock market is still based on fiat currency. And there's a very likelihood that when the GCR takes place that we're going to see a drop in the value of the U.S. dollar. Now, when the dollar drops, it doesn't mean that you lose money because the dollar will still always be a dollar inside the United States. It just means that the value of our currency changes in contrast to other world's currencies. And what that means is anything that's imported into the United States will cost more. When you see a 30% drop in the U.S. dollar, in so many words, it means that anything that is imported is going to cost you 30% more. It's an increase of cost of all imported goods is what it means when the dollar drops. Now, for the stock market, this is just my opinion. I think we could see what is called a V formation in the stock market because this will create a shock to the market because it's not prepared for this. There's, you know, 98% of the people out there in the country don't have any dinar or dong, and they're not prepared for this. They don't know what's going to go on. And when it happens, they're going to say, what in the world just happened? And because of the uncertainty and the unknown, they will begin to pull their money out of the stock market to preserve their investments and to preserve their money. So when the stock drops, they basically will still be able to keep their money in a money market account. But little do they know that the dollar will drop some of its value as well. But it will drop because of a shock. But once all that dust settles and they begin to realize there are hundreds, if not thousands, of trillions of dollars that are being pumped into the economies of countries all around the world, the stock market will come screaming back. Just come screaming back, because countries all around the world are there's going to be money to spend, money to build, money to rebuild countries, money for people like you and me to take vacations and buy new cars. It's going to create an absolute explosion of jobs all around the world in demand for manufactured goods all around the world. And that's going to mean those companies are going to be profitable and their stocks are going to explode. So I call it a V formation. That happened right after the 9/11. When you go back and look at what happened to 9/11, within about a week, the Dow dropped something like 600 to 800 points, and within 2 weeks, it gained it all back.
Okay.
Because it was the shock of an uncertain event. Now, the Republic, how does the Republic fit into all that? Well, part of it is understanding that we don't operate under a true republic. We operate under a corporation status. And, well, when the Federal Reserve goes away, that corporate status goes away, so the public is able to come back into its true form. And that means basically we are no longer having a private company running our world's money supply under a corporation, a private business, versus it being done by a truly elected form of government. All the duties of the Federal Reserve will transfer over to the U.S. Treasury and will basically be now the responsibility of a government administrative branch, a government agency, versus a private company. And that's how it all fits in. Does that make sense?
Yes. May I ask one more question? Quick.
Sure.
The LCC. When you have those entities and when you file to get one, you have to keep it active, because if you let it, if it becomes inactive, once you lose your money or someone could come take your name and take all that you have?
No, they can't take your money. You just have to refile for an LLC certificate as a limited liability company. Now, it's different in every state, but if your LLC goes inactive, it doesn't mean that your bank account becomes inactive and they can come take your money. It just means that you have to refile. You have to always refile your LLC papers once every year. At least it's that way in almost all states, but every state is different. But that has nothing. A bank account is a bank account. They're not going to come and take your money because your LLC papers expire.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
It just means you've lost the ability to have that limited liability coverage and protection. You transfer from an LLC into a sole proprietorship type of a business if you don't renew your LLC papers. And you are more vulnerable in a sole proprietorship for legal lawsuits and things like that to come against you.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thanks a lot. Yep. Okay. Continuing to go on down the list, and I'm going to go next to a lady with area code 774. Her name is Jen. She's from Massachusetts. Jen, how can I help you tonight?
Hi, Dave. How are you? I just wanted to say thank you so much for everything you're doing. We really appreciate it. I had a question on, do you see a U.S. Treasury note being created and replacing the Federal Reserve note? And do you see it happening before or the RV?
Well, I think it happens at the same time as not so much the RV as the global currency reset. Now, that can be semantics in that. At that time is when the shift takes place. They'll say these new U.S. Treasury notes are going to replace the Federal Reserve notes. Now, the Federal Reserve notes, in my estimation, are not going to become worthless overnight, because if they did, you'd have 99% of the people in this country totally pissed off because they just became lost all their money overnight, let alone billions of people around the world who have U.S. currency. That's the type of stuff that creates chaos, anarchy, and wars. So that is not going to happen. Because you've just told billions of people, guess what, you just lost all your money overnight.
Yeah.
And then those of us who have this dinar and getting U.S. Treasury notes money with it, we all suddenly become the wealthy 1%, and we're the only ones who have money. So you see, that ain't going to happen. Okay.
Right.
So what happens? One just phases out and the other phases in. That's all that it is.
Yeah.
You know, that's what President Kennedy had attempted to do. He just didn't get to follow through with it. But, see, if you have a dollar bill and it says Federal Reserve note, you're going to be able to go down to a store and you're going to be able to spend it. And the store is going to take it and put it in the bank. And then the bank is saying, we're taking it out of circulation and we're going to replace it with Treasury. That's all that's going to happen.
A slow phase out and phase in,
That's all it is. Yeah.
The other question I had, which I've not really seen talked about much, is sort of crowd control when this hits. Because we're talking about 5 million people, maybe there's more now. I mean, I'm just picturing like a mad frenzy at the bank. And, you know, you mentioned some of these banks will be having 800 numbers. I wonder if they're special 800 numbers. I wonder where they're coming from. How do we get them?
I think what will happen is, they're going to probably – it's back to the purpose of the 800 numbers is to set up private appointments in your exchange.
Yeah.
So because if you're going to walk in with $1 million, $5 million, $10 million, $100 million, and there's lots of people that have that much, you don't want to be standing in a line with 50 other people and be subject that somebody could pull up in a van three guys with automatic weapons and all of a sudden all your money's gone.
Right.
So they're going to set up some form of a security transaction because it's in their best interest to do it as well as yours. And you know, it'll go public, and they'll probably notify you. They'll probably send you out an email. They'll put notices on your accounts. It'll be in the news. And they'll probably say, call your bank. Call your bank before you go down there. You know? And I wouldn't be surprised if you walk up to a bank and they'll have people posted outside saying, if you're here to exchange currency, call this 800 number. Don't walk inside.
I mean, I'm sure they've thought about this, I'm sure they're planning it.
It's in their best interest.
I called my local bank about 2 weeks ago, just an interesting little side note, and I asked them if they were exchanging Iraqi dinar. And knowing that it has not been an internationally tradable currency, I was just going to call them and find out what they said. And they said, oh, yes, you do. And they read me the rate that's on the XE.com website. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, because I didn't expect them to say, yes, we trade it. And so I just thought that, I just thought that was sort of a good sign, you know, and maybe it was just something that kind of flashed live on their screen temporarily. I don't know, but. You know, it was really exciting.
What was the
one that's on XE.com, which is like 1164 or something like that. But it was the reverse.
That's the rate that's available. That's the current posted international rate. But it surprised me that it said that they're trading it because by law they can't trade it yet until it goes public.
I know. I couldn't believe it. And it was just the It was just the main number that I called, and it was just like a teller or whoever answered, you know. So that was really exciting. And then, of course, I called another local bank, and they said they didn't trade it. But I just thought
it's
that was a nice little.
Well, see, that tells me you probably caught someone who's new, and they don't know what they're doing. And they realize they can't say that yet, but yet it's there for them on their screens.
Right. Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking, too.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was exciting. And then the last question I have is, I'm wondering, and I do listen to some of the Tony calls, but I don't really take his intel 100%. I listen to a lot of different people. You're the number one person that I really trust right now because you have so much integrity and your background and everything. And I just
thank you for doing this. But I'm just wondering, do you think there will be more than one rate? Do you think there will be a contract rate, or do you really feel like it's just going to be one rate for everybody?
Based on the information I am receiving, the group, there's private contracts, there's groups, and there's public. Based
right.
on the information I'm receiving, the groups are not going to get theirs. Only those that had pre-arranged private contracts are going to get the private rates. Everybody else is going to be public. Now, that's subject
yeah.
to change, but that's based on
right.
the latest information I have.
Even that is a huge, amazing, you know, amazing change. I mean, it's an amazing rate. Even if we get
yeah.
one rate, it's still going to be a huge, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Return on our investment.
It's huge. And what
yeah.
I can say, in fact, I talked with a gentleman this morning on the phone. I need to keep it confidential. But he says, Dave, I've already cashed out in a private contract.
Yep.
I talked with a gentleman this morning who has already cashed out in private contract. It's happening, folks. It
yeah.
is happening.
Yeah.
It's going on. It just
it
takes
is.
Time for it to unfold before it gets to us.
That's
and
right.
I've talked with a second gentleman who is, I want to see, how can I say this? He just said he got a phone call from his banker and say, hop on the plane, come change your money.
Yeah.
And see, so I've had conversations with three different people who either have or are in the process of setting up their private exchanges. It's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just hope that, you know, the delays don't go on and on and on and on for months. And, you know, I mean, maybe that's not possible. You know, maybe it's not possible
mm-hmm.
that it's going to drag on and on and on and on. What do you think? I mean, I know that it's
I don't
a process.
Think it's – if something comes up, it's just something that we don't see because some cabal out there is throwing another monkey wrench in it that we don't see.
Right.
That's how
right.
I see it.
Yeah.
Based on all the information, it's going, it's underway. It just takes
yeah.
longer than what we anticipate because we
right.
don't understand all the steps it has to go through.
Yeah.
And the
yeah.
steps are – and I can understand why they're doing this. They don't want to create chaos and panic, and so it needs to be done
right.
in a very orderly fashion to keep it,
yeah.
to make sure it stays a civil affair.
Exactly.
You know? We don't
yeah.
want a bunch of chaos and panic and
no.
all this stuff.
Exactly.
So,
but I think
and,
it's inevitable either way, you know, and I think it's a big, heavy train that it's really nobody can stop it.
Yeah.
Eventually,
yeah.
it's going to happen.
Oh, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's like what
yeah.
I said. It's common sense Iraq is going to revalue their currency. It's not a question
yeah.
of if. It's only a matter of when and at what rate.
Right. So thank you again.
Yeah.
I appreciate you taking
okay.
my call. I appreciate everything you're doing.
Thanks, Jen.
Thanks, Dave. Okay.
Okay, good night. Okay, good night. Okay, I am now going to a gentleman from area code 972. His name is Roger, and Roger, I got you from here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
How can I help you?
I heard you mention that there might be some scholarships available for your meeting. Is that there? And if there is, how would I go about checking on those?
Send me an email. Either DaveSchmidt@MSN.com or the SedonaConnection@MSN.com. I'll get back to you. And what I say, the scholarship rates are at $25 because I want people to be able to come. And I understand some folks are on, you know, basically fixed incomes or out of work and stuff like that, and they're unemployed, and it's a stretch for them. I want you to be able to come as long as I have the room.
Thank you.
Send me an email. And as of right now, there's still room.
Okay, great. Another question
yeah.
is a bunch have a nonprofit that I've had for a while that's been inactive, but the nonprofit has bought a lot of the currency. And do you understand that the taxation, that it will be tax-free if it's bought with inside of a nonprofit? Is that what you understand?
Well, you put the money into a nonprofit, and as long as it operates as a nonprofit and you're making legitimate expenses out of a nonprofit, then it's all non-taxable.
That's what I thought.
And then what you would pull out and use for yourself personally, then that's just like a salary. Now, if you are the administrator of the nonprofit, you can pay yourself a salary as the administrator of that nonprofit, and then that's your normal salary taxable income.
Yeah, it works just like an LLC that you were talking about earlier. They can own cars and houses and offices and
yep.
all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Okay, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Roger.
Bye.
Good night. Okay, next, going down the list, I'm going to a gentleman who area code 215. His name's Richard, and he's from Philadelphia. Richard, how are you tonight?
All right. How you doing, Dave?
Good.
Really hearing your calls and the information received. I ran into the question. I have a church that is a nonprofit under the 501c3, and I was wondering,
uh-huh.
would it be advantageous for me to, I don't have much dinars, but to exchange my dinar within the, under the church account?
I would.
And then purchase, you know, I mean, like purchase whatever I have to do, pay bills, whatever I have to pay from that account. You know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was saying the reason I asked is I asked this other question to someone. They said you don't want to exchange to label as a for-profit operation by a non-profit organization. So I don't know
right.
what that meant, but.
Well, here's what I would do, Richard, is you basically right now, if the currency is in your personal possession, you need to
yes.
write a gift letter that you're gifting it to the church, which is the nonprofit, so that
okay.
when it revalues, it is basically it revalues within the control and ownership of the church. Therefore, the income will not be taxable because it's in a nonprofit setting. And you,
okay.
Now, there's two different things you can do on that. Now, what's nice about a gift letter is you can always revoke the gift letter at any time that you want to up till the time that the currency revalues. You change your mind.
Okay.
And you could hold a little bit back for yourself personally. You could put all of it into there. And if you are the, quote, administrator, pastor, or CEO of the nonprofit church, you can pay yourself a salary. A church can purchase your car. The car is owned by the church, but it's for your use. You see, what
yeah.
that does, it allows all your money to stretch. I mean, you know, I know churches that provide cars for their pastors. They provide parsonages and homes for their pastors. You know, they pay for their pastor's cell phone, you know, and the list just goes on and on and on. Well, to do that, that means all that is now, it means you've given up the right of the ownership to it to the church, but you're the one who controls the purse strings of the church. So it just needs to be a legitimate church. If you're audited by the IRS, they're just going to try to say, are you just using this as a front to get by with something, or are you a legitimate church in operation? And that goes in conjunction with what your state laws are.
Okay. And yes, it is a legitimate church. And another thing is, how would that letter be formatted? Does it need to be formatted a certain way?
What I would do is just go in and Google and just Google gift letters and just look at all the different templates and the examples that they have and pick one that fits you. The biggest thing about it, it needs to be a simple statement that is legible and understandable, that it would say, I, Richard, so-and-so in your name, do gift these X number of dinar or dong to this nonprofit organization, you know, the name of the church, which is a 501c3, And then you just date it and sign it, and it's usually best to have a witness sign it as well.
Okay, have a witness sign it.
And it's just usually a safe thing to do is to have a witness sign it as well. Now, you can choose to revoke that letter anytime you want to if you change your mind. See, it's just up to you. But what that does, you've now basically put it there under the control of them, and you're just saving yourself just tons of money in taxes when you do that.
Where do I send the letter? I mean, do I just hold the letter, or
part of your records in case you get audited by the IRS.
Oh, okay. So do you think it should be notarized?
You know, it's up to you. Some people would say, yes, you should. I know I've got gift letters that I have signed as witnesses, and they're not notarized. It's just the statement that you have to come up with if you're audited by the IRS, and they have to say, well, why did it was your currency, what did you do with it, or why is this money non-taxable? And says, well, because I gave it to the church. It's like a receipt. It's a form of a receipt of your contribution is all that it is.
Now, could you answer what the response from someone when they would say that you did not want to exchange to a label as a for-profit operation by a nonprofit organization? They just made that statement. I don't know. Do you know what they would be talking about?
Yeah, you need to be making sure that the church is legitimately operating as a nonprofit, and it's not just a front of a for-profit operation. That's all that statement is. Now, remember, I always really recommend that you get with a financial advisor or a CPA, because everybody's situation is different. And I need to make this statement publicly for everybody here on the air. When I give this advice, my advice is not legal advice. It's only an opinion. It's only educational. But you always need to seek the advice of a professional.
So. I understand.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And that was very helpful. God bless you.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Good night, Richard. Yeah. Okay. Next, I am going to go to a lady by the name of Linda in area code 630. Linda, you're on the air. How can I help you?
Well, hello, Dave. I have a couple questions that I would like to ask you. Do you have any idea, like, how long it would be between the RV and the GCR, or are they going to be, like, boom, 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 back-to-back?
Boy,
or
that's the trillion-dollar question if I had the answer to that.
Okay. Well, I don't think I'll have that much.
We just don't know, and there's different theories around that. That's all. Okay. Most people think they're all going to happen at the same time, but there is a possibility that they could happen separately. How much time in between would be determined upon the political events, the political influence and the pressure, and some of the financial stuff that's going on, and then also possibly the decision-making of the people who are releasing the funds, i.e. representatives of the Dragon family. It's their decision.
Okay. Because
they're the ones footing the bill. That's how I look at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is a private contract when you talk about that people cash in already that have private contracts? What does that mean? What are you referring to?
Private contracts are people that have been in this for a long time. They established contracts with certain entities, like maybe the government of China. They are whales who have a lot. I mean, I'm talking in the billions and billions of dinar in dong. And they are also humanitarian aid organizations. And the individual may be acting as the trustee or the administrator of that organization. And they are getting cashed out early because it's not something that's for personal use. It's for a humanitarian aid project. And a lot of it is they're wanting to just get these people out of the way before we have the stampede of the masses.
Wow, well, that makes sense.
And I think that's the simplest way to put it.
Okay, one last question. Do you know what's on the screens at the banks? Do you know?
We are being told it's 371.
Okay, and you know anything about the dong?
The dong, different rates are being reported, and it's basically somewhere, what I'm hearing is it's somewhere between 50 cents and 80 cents. But it's not. It's just hard to say for the dong because, again, it's a part of the global currency reset. It's a part of a bigger package and a bigger picture where the dinar is one specific currency of a specific country.
Okay. Well, that's all I have. Thank you very much.
And, again, those are just speculation. It could all change tomorrow.
So. Got it. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Dave.
Great. Thanks a lot. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As I keep going on down the line, I am going to, let's see here, a lady by the name of Lynn from area code 917. She's from Florida. Lynn, you're on the air. How are you tonight?
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing good.
I'm well as well. Thank you for everything that you're doing. You're making everything really easy to understand. I am a former financial advisor, so I'm quite literate.
Bless your heart. I love hearing that from you. Here's a professional
yes.
that says I got my stuff together.
Yeah, no, you're really good. You have a lot of patience, which
oh,
is very
you.
Important, but that's probably because you are trained as a minister. So,
well, I've been around money stuff for a long time, too. So, yeah,
well, it's been my entire life, so... I worked on Wall Street, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I want to say a couple things and then ask your question. One is that people have to not be afraid of paying taxes. It's not a bad thing to pay the taxes. It's actually an honor that you have enough money to pay them so we can live here.
I agree.
And, you know, just setting up churches that aren't really churches, you will get audited and, you know, it's not just a willy-nilly thing. It's a very complex thing. People need attorneys, estate attorneys, and they need CPAs. And I really just want to say that they should not sign anything they don't understand. They should not go into any investments they don't understand. If they don't understand them, don't go into them. Spend the time. Learn. Don't just say, well, I don't know anything about money, because that's like saying, I don't know anything about my body, so I just eat whatever's in front of me. You know, people cannot afford to do that now. It's a whole other ballgame, because if people don't know money, as fast as it comes, it's going to go.
Yep.
That's just the way it goes. People win the lottery, and then they're broke again. So you either know money, or you don't know money, or you learn it. But, you know, we have this incredible opportunity, and it's very important to go from the heart about what you're here to do, which is what you say, and to do it, but do it legally. So anyway, I just wanted your opinion on immediate annuities.
Well, first of all, I just want to say, Lynn, thank you so much for what you said. You're echoing what I agree with. And if you were here, I'd give you a big hug and a kiss on the cheek. You know, I mean, I really appreciate what you have to say. And folks, and Ida says, you know, if you want to be a millionaire, then educate yourself to be a millionaire. You're not a pauper anymore. You're not living on a few thousand dollars a year anymore, a few thousand dollars a month. And that means there's an education process to learn how to do it right and do it. And you don't have the excuse that you don't have the money anymore, that you can't afford it. That will no longer be an excuse. And if you don't learn how to do it right, and if you try to cut corners, it'll catch up with you. And, Lynn, I loved your statement about being willing to pay taxes. I love America, and I'm willing to pay my fair share to make this be a wonderful place to live. Somebody's got to pay for the infrastructure of America. And I'm going to pay my fair share of taxes. I'm not going. I will take the legal write-offs that are legally mine, but I'll pay my fair share on a legal basis. And I'm not going to try to skirt around it and try to avoid it or try to scrimp and try to make it a game about how much taxes that I can't pay or I don't have to pay. No, I'll go out.
There's
I'll make
another,
my purchase.
There's another organization that's talking about taking money offshore to avoid taxes, that's all being cracked down on. It's,
I know.
Okay. So
gifting
everything away, it means you just gave it away. Like, you have to be really literate before you go and give someone all of your money. You really have to know what you're doing to do that.
And
I personally do not advise it.
And Lynn, I agree with you. When you start to sending your money offshore, you just put a big, huge, fat target on yourself when you do that. And you better know what you're doing, because they will come after you and they will lock you up and they will send you away to jail if you don't do that right. I have a lady that lives down the street from me in Sedona, and her husband, both her and her husband, had spent time in prison for tax evasion and tax fraud. And he thought he could get by with it. And, you know, now, can I just share something while I got you here? Because, boy, you're just a lady after my own heart. When people ask me about doing offshore stuff, I'm just saying, I'm not even going to talk about it. Because here's why. Now, this is my opinion. But I get on a little bit of a soapbox when people talk about sending their money offshore. It's called greed. Greed,
yeah, I agree.
Greed, greed. It's called, I want to have my millions and my billions, and I don't want to pay any taxes, and I'm going to foot that bill. I'm going to ship it on to you. I'm going to make you pay the taxes that I don't have to pay. It's called selfishness and greed to do that. And I
completely
thought, how
agree.
Greedy do you? I thought, here you are. You're going to get to become an overnight millionaire, multimillionaire, and how greedy can you get? Instead of just
right.
being
Plus,
thankful.
We're entering an age of transparency, so there's not going
Absolutely.
To be any place to hide. And furthermore, we don't really need that much money. This money is for those people who have consciousness. I'm from New York City. You know, I'm used to being in enormous wealth, but it can consume your whole life. The people with the most wealth have the most poverty consciousness, which is why this money coming to us now is for those with consciousness about using it the way God intended, which is for the people. Share it. It's a privilege. You know, if you have a bunch of stuff, you're just a hoarder and you have to take care of it, and after a while it becomes like a drug. I know people who are stuck hoarding and they can't let go. They have no life. So it's really for now, for feeding people, housing people, clothing people, stopping these atrocious conditions that none of us can stomach. We can make a real difference being given this money.
You know, here's to me. See, money to me is a form of energy, and it's neutral.
Yes.
And whatever you bring into that money, when you get more money, all it's going to do is expand and compound what you're bringing into it. If you're bringing in gratitude, thankfulness, love, and generosity, it will expound the thankfulness, love, and generosity. If you're bringing greed and fear and anxiety into it, then your life is going to be miserable. Because it's going to expound and expand your greed and your fear and your misery. That's what money does.
It's a reflection of consciousness.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, okay, now you had a question about annuities.
Oh, I'm on the fence about annuities, so I wanted your professional opinion on them.
Well, I'm not real knowledgeable about annuities. I do think that if you want to know that you're always going to have some money and have a safe amount to always have each month for the rest of your life, then I think it's a good thing to take some of your money and put it into that. It's just what makes you feel comfortable and what is good for you. And I think if annuities fits that for you, then I'd say go for it.
Oh, okay.
You know, go for it. You can.
I was
just wondering
about the insurance companies going forward, if you had any feeling on whether they were going to be going forward with us.
I don't know. I don't have a feel for that to really give a qualified answer on that, Lynn. That's one I don't. I would be way. I'd just be guessing too much if I said anything on that. So
that's my only question. Yeah. But the rest of it is just. It's so exciting. It's just so unbelievable. All the promises that have been made for so long, and it's like the time. And it's just really amazing.
Well, I'm just noticing the pictures getting, it's like the notch of clarity is being dialed up every day. It's becoming more clear, and it's all beginning to fall into a funnel and becoming clear.
Yeah, so I had, 2 weeks ago, I had sent you an email saying if you want to do a seminar in Florida, I'm willing to help coordinate it. And I spoke with Charla. And so we're connected, and so I'm just repeating that this is who I am. Out of all the people who are contacting you,
well,
I think it'll be very, very beneficial.
Well, where would you recommend in Florida? I would imagine probably Central Florida is the best place, probably somewhere in the Orlando area.
I'm actually moving to the Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater area, and I think that's probably a very good place. Yeah.
Of course you would.
Right.
Yeah. I get it. So okay.
Charla and I are connected, so the offer is there. It'd be like the first financial seminar I'd be really honored and happy to assist with.
You guys are gonna put the undue influence on me, huh?
Oh, yes, you must come to this beautiful place with this fabulous weather. Yes.
I know. Florida's wonderful. I've been there. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice. Moving from New York, it's been unbelievable. It's just so nice here.
All right. Well, I need to move on. I've got about another 5 or 6 calls to get through.
I know. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for all of your time. Thank you for your presence, for everything you're doing. You're making this process for me easy.
Okay. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Okay, good night. Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Okay. Wow, what a sweetheart. That's just nice to hear that from a professional person like that. So, okay, I'm going to go on to the next caller here, and I'm going on to a gentleman by the name of Sean, and the area code is 843. I should say I'm assuming this is a gentleman. I hope I didn't get that wrong. But Sean, you're on the air. What can I help you with?
Yes. Thank you, David. Appreciate it. I have recently just started listening to you via some of your videos. I love the format that you use on the videos. I love, hearing your explanation as some people's, you basically simplify it and do it in a way that's really understanding, and I appreciate that. A couple of line items. The woman a while back that talked about the $50 million, I listen to Tony quite often, and he was basically saying that when they were talking about these contract rates, that they were only going to allow people to exchange $50 million at that particular contract rate, and then there was a lot of traps, if you will, if you did something like that, and so that's what he was alluding to, and that's what she was trying to find out more information about. The question that I have is I don't have a LLC. And I'm not going to start a church, but I was planning on exchanging. And my question is, can I set up an LLC after I exchange? I mean, can I go to a bank, just literally exchange, and then eventually set up an LLC and transfer everything into an LLC, or do I have to do that ahead of time?
Yeah, you can. What you just need to do is establish receipts for everything that you spend, because everything that would be considered to not be a part of the business would basically, you're going to be taxed on it. And it's you can put the money into a personal account and then later transfer it all to an LLC, but you lose some of the tax advantages of that by not having it done up in advance. And then you are subject to the facts that, you know, it's, you don't have that liability protection if it's in a personal account.
Right.
LLCs aren't that hard. You can Google, you know, just to, you know, form an LLC in your state, and it'll give you ways to do it. Almost all the states, you can do it yourself online. You just got to understand how to, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's and use the appropriate terminology. Or you can hire someone else to do it for you. And there are national firms that will do it for you in every state, and you just pay them a small fee.
Well, Zoom.com and things like that. But
yeah.
if I don't have an actual business, like I thought maybe my business could be trading, you know. I mean, do I have to have an actual function to set up an LLC?
Well, what's the purpose of a business? Is it not to make money?
Well,
and
yes.
And can your trading and investments be a form of making money? Yes. So that can be your business. Your business is basically your investments. Even if it's just sitting in a bank or sitting in a stock account, you're still in the process of making money. And you're using that also as a form to pay for your education to learn how to expand that. And your business does not even have to be profitable to be a business. As I mentioned last week, Amazon.com lost money for the first 7 or 8 years and they were in operation. They didn't make a profit until almost 8 to 10 years after they were going. See, so you don't have to make a profit to be a legitimate business. You just have to show that there's business, and the intent of a business is to make money.
Okay.
And see, I'm a market trader. That's my business. That's what
I do. Okay. Yeah. The second question I had was, when this thing does, and I'm glad that someone asked a question earlier about the RV versus the GCR, because, again, I've been trying to do my due diligence. I've been trying to learn this. You know, I listen to various gurus, if you will. I try to read all different types of boards, EXO and all those guys. What I really like about you is you just really spell it out, and you're not afraid to say, you know, a lot of these other guys almost sound like they got a secret sauce that you have to try to wait and find out, you know, and it drives me crazy because, you know, it's almost like if they say the wrong thing, it's going to affect the whole RV, and that just drives me absolutely bonkers because you never get the full information, so I really appreciate your clarity. The thing I'm talking about now is what they refer to as the float, and I'm not sure what the float means, if it's for the bank, or would you suggest that if this thing RVs, let's say a 371, and let's say I have so many dinars, and I take half of those dinars and cash in right away, and then I hold on to the other dinars, and hopefully it goes up, would you even suggest that, or would you suggest that I just go and cash all this stuff in right away and put it into an account?
Different opinions on that. To me, what I am hearing, the leading opinion is there is going to be a float, which means it will come out on the open market at 371 for a specified period of time, and it could be just a couple of days, it could be a week, and then it will be placed out onto the open market as any other of the 100 and plus 80 currencies around the world. And because it's so new, and if it's undervalued, and because there's so much out there to cash in, it could possibly go up very rapidly. That did happen to the Kuwaiti dinar back in 1991. Now, I don't know this exactly, but I've heard this secondhand, is that when the Kuwaiti dinar regained its value, it came back at 341, and within a couple of weeks, it actually shot up to $8 for a couple of days and then rapidly came back down. It's a possibility that could happen with the dinar. And I would say, you know, just cash in. If you know it's going to go out onto an open float and to an open market, and it's going to be a very, you know, it can float like all the other currencies, I would say just cash in enough that you need for your operating expenses and then watch it on a daily basis.
Well, that's what I was thinking because
And don't get greedy.
No, I'm not trying to get greedy. I'll be honest with you. You know, I have been listening to Tony for a while. And every time I listened to him, I always had a bad taste in my mouth when he talked about these $30 contract rates, and then he even says there's a market rate out there right now of $5, and then there's the international rate. And I really started listening and kind of getting away from all the hopium, and I said, you know what, this is not making sense to me. I mean, I can understand the international rate, and I can understand the float. And so I thought, I'm just going to be happy just getting the international rate to do exactly what you said, make enough money so I can pay my bills and do what I need to take care of, and then kind of hold on to it and see how it goes. Now, with that being said, what do you look at? Because I'm not a trader, and you said you do this. What would you look at?
What you do is that you just go onto a website, you get the, you know, you look at foreign exchange sites and the different rates that are quoted there, and those rates are, those currencies are traded 24 hours a day, and they're always just flashing all the time, and that's what you look for when it goes public, okay? Sean, what I need to do, I need to move on because I got four more callers left, and I only got 10 minutes.
I appreciate
it.
Thank you. Yep,
all right.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Okay, good night.
All right, mm-hmm. Bye.
Yeah. Okay, folks, I've got four more callers. I'm going to try to get to everybody. So just know that the next four callers, I may have to cut you just a little bit short, but let's keep going. I'm now going to Kevin, area code 412 from Western Pennsylvania. Kevin, you're on the air. What can I help you with?
Hey, Dave. Thanks for taking my call. As far as a CPA and tax attorney are concerned, should I have one of those beforehand? I can do that, but should I be rushing to get those guys in place?
Not necessarily, because, see, you only need those for your tax purposes, and your tax stuff really isn't until the end of the year. It just depends. If you have them, yes. If not, talk to your banker and ask for them for a referral, because make that banker be your friend. It's just once you set up your business, you always keep receipts for everything, and then you can take that into a CPA later and set that up after you get your money. It's what fits best for you. That's all.
Okay. All right. One more quick, and you'll probably answer this real fast. With the Federal Reserve press conference today, the lady who was now chair, Yellen, she seemed to have that deer in her headlights look in her eyes the whole time. Are they running scared?
No, that's just Janet Yellen. I've been watching that stuff. That's just who she is. And that press conference today, see, the Fed meets about once every 9 weeks for 2 days, and at the end of the 2 days, the chairman comes out and has a press conference and say, this is what we're doing, this is what blah, 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 blah. And that's all it was today. It was just their once every kind of like about 9 or 10 weeks press conference. That's all it was.
Okay.
And that's just who she
all
is.
All right.
That's just Janet.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Dave.
All right. Okay. Okay, bye-bye. Okay, next I'm going to Peter in Toronto. Peter, you're on the air. What can I help you with?
Hi, Dave. How are you? Good, good.
Yep.
You had a caller last week from Canada, from BC. I'm from Toronto, Canada, and I just wanted to really rip through something quickly to help some of the Canadians. She was asking about opening up an account and registering a business and so forth. I used to have my own business, three hair salons, and what you do is, if she is listening or they're listening for Canada, she just has to go to register her business at the government agency. It's about $100, and then after she can incorporate it with her accountant, it costs her like about $800 or so to do that. And you were right when you said that up here in Canada is the same as in the States. If she wanted to purchase a vehicle for like $100,000 or so, and a house under the business, that she can, because there is no limit to what she can do, what she can purchase under the business. I think you were saying that the last time when you mentioned her last week.
What's that? Yeah, I remember
Hello?
That.
Hello? Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm listening.
And
yeah.
Also, okay, and then also, too, one other thing was I wanted to mention as well, that what she can do is over here, when I made some extra money, 1 year, what my accountant did, he told me that we were allowed one-in-a-lifetime capital gain exempt over here. So if she puts all the money into the account, when she puts all the money into the account for that corporation will be allowed once-in-a-lifetime capital gain, and she can't use it again. But over here in Toronto, we were allowed that one-in-a-lifetime capital gains exempt.
Well, that'd be the time to use it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure it's applicable to the other provinces, but if she would open up her sole proprietorship, then turn it into a corporation beforehand, and then, like you were saying just now, and then take all the money and dump it in, then she might be applicable for that capital gains. Like her, she gets a really good CA. He could probably advise her on that.
Okay. I'm going to let you go, Peter. Thanks for the advice, unless you've got anything else really quick.
You're welcome.
Okay.
That's
right,
it. Thank you.
Okay, good night.
Bye-bye.
Yep.
Good night.
Okay, next, I'm going to Corey, a lady from Florida, area code 321. Corey, you're on the air. What can I help you with?
Hi, I have two questions. I know we have to do this fast. My mother has an existing trust. Can you put money into the existing trust? Do you need to set up a new bank, a separate bank account in the trust, or do you need a whole
different
trust?
My understanding is yes, you can always put it into an existing trust, but double check with that on either your banker or your CPA, someone who helps and understands trust. But my understanding is yes.
All right, thank you. The other question is, what's going on with the bankers? Is it connected?
Who knows?
Who knows?
There's all kinds of different opinions out there and different theories, and I haven't seen anything that I would call substantial on it.
Okay, that's all. We just wondered if you had an opinion on that particular issue. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Corey. Okay.
All right. Bye.
Okay, good night. Yeah. Okay, next lady I'm going to is a wonderful lady by the name of Margaret in Florida. And let's see. Well, I did click on it there. It didn't. There we go. Now it's starting to come up. Hi, Margaret. You're on the air. What can I help you with?
Well, I'll be real quick. First of all, I really want to thank you for clarifying the global revaluation for me better than anyone. I've been listening for months, and when I found you on Dinar's recap and listened to you, then I recommended you to Mary, who is from Oregon, and we have been following you. And that's all I'm going to say there because we're on a limited time. But I wanted to mention that no one that I've heard in the months I've been listening has at any time told anyone that when this does become reset, that the dinar will become a tradable commodity. And at that point, you're not going to necessarily go in the bank and receive $3.71. You may go in there and receive $4.10 or $3.05. It's being traded. The hedge funds will push it up and down. This is going to be going on, and people are going to be shocked when they go in there that there's not a set rate for the dong or the dinar or any of these global currencies that are being bought and sold. So I thought it would behoove someone to at least do that for people so they're not in shock when they walk in the bank. And you can leave if you're just going in for the international rate and you don't like what the Forex says today. You can come back tomorrow, set another appointment
up. That's true.
Or set yourself up with a private banker. Ask them, tell them how much you have to notify you, please, and you will come in and exchange it in their bank. And so, therefore, you'll find that a lot of bankers are willing to do that for you because they want that money in their bank. And a lot of people don't realize this. You're in control. Yeah. They're not in control. You are. So, and it's a matter of, you know, just going in there, and if you don't like what's being offered to you, you don't buy it today. So what do you think?
That's
Margaret.
Yes. See, and that's very similar to what I described with the previous caller about the float.
I apologize because I was speaking to your friend on the phone.
Right. See, it can fluctuate, it can change, and it could very easily do that in the beginning. But now when you say it's a tradable commodity, after a while, it will settle, and then it's not going to change much from day to day, just as other currencies don't. But in the beginning, it could have a wide fluctuation in its value. I mean, so, yeah.
Well, that was my point. I didn't
have that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't give the time limit of being after a couple of weeks. So what I meant was the first few days when you go in there, like they're all afraid they got to rush right now this morning and go to the bank and get right in there. Well, that's not a happening thing. You're kind of probably better off if you wait a day or two, you know, or at least go in there and set up a, you know, some kind of relationship with a banker and ask them to notify you.
All right. I need to let you go. I got one more caller to get in the next minute. Okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Margaret. Okay. Last caller for the night. This lady is the – hey, how are you?
I'm doing good, Dave.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I'm not going to give out your name unless you want me to. But it's a guy who works with an organization called Pay It Forward.
Yep.
How are you?
It's Pip. I'm doing I've had better days, but just have what's coming forward is very exciting. Wanted you personally to know and my friends know that I will be seeing you Sunday. I've gotten travel arrangements for some other stuff and coming to visit, listen, help anyone I can. Just looking forward to spending time with some good people. So I wanted to make sure you knew that publicly. So I made
all
the reservations.
Now, what can I say? I know. Can I want to respect your confidentiality. Can I say that what you're going to be doing tonight and where you're going?
You know what? I'll tell you what. I'll let's explain that on Sunday. Okay?
That sounds
I'm even
good.
I'm even bringing my son with me to do my driving for me while I'm there. But he's very interested in the whole process. Obviously, he's my next generation and my oldest son. So it's going to be a great time and a good visit. And I'm hoping to see many of my friends that I have in the area and in Texas that I anticipate coming to. And if anybody needs help coming, get with Dave, and Dave, get with me, and I'll help make sure that it happens. And, again, I don't think everyone's going to agree with everybody's view on everything. It's about being educated and listening for key things to help you make the right decisions. So, you know, that's what it is for me, because I know I don't agree with everything Joe says or John says, but it's important to listen to what everybody says so we can make good choices.
Okay.
So I'm
very
excited about the rest of the week, and
I am
excited
too
about
you.
Sunday.
Yeah, I won't say anything, but maybe we'll just get to be able to tell it next week. But let me just say this, folks, for you guys, this is one of my informants. This is one of the guys that gives me some information, but I need to keep him confidential. But he knows there's some exciting stuff coming up, and hopefully next week we'll be able to tell you the story. So, okay? How's that?
Sounds good to me.
Good.
I wish everyone the best, and I'll see everyone Sunday that shows up, and if not, Wednesday we'll share some more if it's even people have time for us on Wednesday.
Okay. All right. Good. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
See you Sunday.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yep. Well, folks, actually, now, I've actually gone over my full 2 hours, but here's what I have learned, what somebody told me. At the two-hour mark, if you're on the air live, supposedly you get cut off, but the recording continues to go for about another 5 minutes. And so those of you that are listening to the archive will still get to continue all that conversation. If you're listening live and you didn't get to hear it all, then what would be good for you to do is go on and listening to the archive, okay? Well, folks, thanks. Another wonderful program. Hey, folks, I love all you guys calling in. You really bring up such great stuff. So here we are. Hopefully something's going to be happening for us by the weekend, okay, folks? And you heard what I had to say. It's all underway. It's all unfolding. We're continuing to look forward to it with a very positive and loving and caring environment. Again, just to wrap up, this is Dave Schmidt with the Sedona Connection. It's the SedonaConnection.com. You can go on there. You can catch my newsletters. You can see what I'm talking about. If you want to be on the newsletter list, you can sign up. It's in the right-hand column there. You can also go and friend and like my Facebook page as well. Okay, and we got the conference this weekend, and folks, that if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, if you want to be at the conference, and send me an email. I've got some room. As long as I have room, I'll let you come, okay, because we're all in this together, and we want to be able to help each other all the way through, okay? All right, thanks, folks. Thanks a lot for another absolutely wonderful evening. Love all of you. Okay, good night.